Get in on the discussion. 617-779-0985. The Sports Hub Hockey Show. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Welcome in to another edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Got the gang in studio once again this week. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers. Joe Haggerty will join us later on in the hour. Billy Jaffe will join us coming up next hour as well. And for those of you who have been in NFL-induced slumber until now, welcome. It is officially hockey season for everyone here in the Boston area. And you've picked a good time to jump in because if you haven't noticed, you've got one of the best teams in the league playing just down the road from us here. And it continued again this week, guys. I mean, here you go. You know, you come back for another week, win over Toronto, and then back-to-back games at Detroit and at the Rangers. And you don't expect necessarily that on the second night of a back-to-back, and I know the Rangers are going through some things as an organization right now, but you don't expect necessarily to see your team score six goals when you're playing for the second game in a back-to-back.
Well, Anton Hudobin was fabulous in that game, especially early on. I think we saw the Bruins. It was very atypical because they have locked it down so well. This is the best defensive team in the National Hockey League. They gave up some grade-A opportunities in that opening 20 minutes. And when the game was still in doubt, and this was very early, Anton Hudobin made some spectacular saves. One on Zibanejad, one on Rick Nash. And then early in the second period, Bruins had a 2-1 lead. I think it's Jesper Fast who had a terrific opportunity. Anton Hudobin is able to stone that, and then the Bruins get to work.
Yeah, as impressive as that game was, the most impressive game to me was Toronto. And I know it's a week ago, but You got the team that you're closest with in the standings coming in here. You've lost to them twice this year. You're without Brad Marchand. McAvoy's first game back, if I'm not mistaken, right? That was his first game back. So, and that's a team that you're neck and neck with right now in the standings, and you hadn't beaten them, so you want to come out, you want to set the tone, you want to play your game, and finding a way to win. And they were healthy, like that's pretty much their team. So to me, that was a really impressive game. They locked it down defensively. They really took away some of the big guns for Toronto. They were tight in the neutral zone. They really didn't allow them to get going, and then they got the goals, you know, when they needed them. They get three wins this week, so we're, you know, not a
take
whole lot
pick
to pick apart.
Yeah.
But you know, to me, that's the most impressive win because that's the team that's you're closest with.
Well, we had talked about it last week, kind of going into that game. Not a bad measuring stick type of a game because, as you mentioned, you've lost to them twice. Now, obviously, that was earlier in the season, and this is a much different team since then. But this is a team that a lot of people for the last couple of months, it looks like, you know, this is your most likely first round matchup. Now the Bruins have put themselves into a position where they have a chance to maybe, you know, leapfrog over Tampa Bay and win the division. But if you finish second, you're going to get Toronto in the first round. So, you know, bit of a statement game. And as I said, a bit of a measuring stick game. And Bob's right in that, boy, you go back and look at that game, you know, I mean, Austin Matthews was almost non-existent in that game. I think he had one shot. You know, the guys that you expect from Toronto to, you know, come up with big performances in that game, the Bruins neutralized them completely.
Well, and Mike Babcock had the same reaction that you did.
Yeah.
After watching that game, the Bruins were harder on the puck. I think that was the most significant thing. The game is about one-on-one battles all over the ice across the 200x85. The Bruins won almost all of them. They were quicker. They were stronger. They were much more dedicated, and the results showed.
And you know, and again, it's the way that you mentioned being hard on the puck. I mean, it's the way that they're winning, right? I mean, it's not just the fact that they're scoring six goals. I mean, they win the game in Detroit the other night. And again, they're getting depth scoring. Sean Corrali scores, and Danton Heinen, you know, filling in for Brad Marchand, has done a tremendous job. The depth throughout that roster has been readily apparent here throughout this entire couple of months streak that they've been on.
Yeah, that is one of the more impressive things. The style of play, the way that they can lock it down defensively, still the number one defensive team in the NHL right now, climbing the charts in terms of the offense as well. Special teams are all good. They're top five or six in special teams. the depth they can roll out, you know, the lines that they can roll out. They don't get stuck with, okay, we need Bergeron against the other team's top line if you're on the road. You know, at home, you know, against Toronto, you know, we saw a lot of that. But they don't get where, okay, we need Bergeron against the other team's top line because they've got other lines they can rely on. I mean, the Nash line has been really strong defensively. Now you've got everybody back in place with Marchand back in there and, you know, put Heinen back on that line. So the fourth line has been reliable and good, you know, at certain times this year. And it's great to see Corrali finally get, you know, rewarded with some of the hard work. And he's been there. And he brings it every night. He kind of personifies the what you want a fourth line to be. Just work, 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 and finish your hits and, you know, really be a pain in the neck to kind of play against. And that's exactly what that fourth line is. Achari's been out and, you know, Zarnik comes in. Zarnik's had 3 points in three games. Mm-hmm. You know, the contributions up and down the lineup, whether you're looking at the forwards, whether you're looking at the backup goaltender, and obviously the starting goaltender, I'm kind of waiting for it to burst, and it hasn't burst. I'm loving the ride. You just kind of expect it to kind of burst at some point, but hey, keep going.
Well, we talked about it, I think, you know, 2-3 weeks ago at that point, and it was like, all right, now you've gotten into a stretch where it's been like a quarter of the season that, you know,
yeah, it's not
that
a
you had
now.
I mean, it's like now you're to the point where, like, you are this team. This is not just a hot streak. You're this good of a team. And now, you know, you start talking about, and we'll get into it, I'm sure, not this week, next week, and, you know, still got 16 days before the trade deadline. But now you've got people starting to talk about, well, do you need to think seriously about, you know, shoring this team up for a deep Stanley Cup run? Whereas early in the season, you were looking at it and going, all right, you know, we're going to slow play this, and you're going to keep developing guys. And there's going to be some interesting decisions that Don Sweeney is going to have to make about how tentative does he want to be about this? And do you not want to, you want to make sure you don't give away too much in any deals that you might make here over the next couple of weeks?
Well, I think a lot of GMs around the league are probably going to have to rethink what they want to do at the trade deadline. I'm sure George McPhee didn't envision that he would be at the top of the Pacific Division. And instead of a guy, and he still is in position if he wants to sell some assets in order to bolster his team down the stretch. But I'm sure that Don Sweeney and Cam Neely and everybody in hockey operations for the Boston Bruins is probably thinking about that. And remember, it's not just what your team is about. It's what's around the National Hockey League. What does the rest of the Eastern Conference look like? What are some of the challenges that you might have in the Western Conference? It'll be interesting to see. I think Bob and I had talked about this at the tail end of the Ranger game, that maybe we'll get an indication, a more clear indication of what the Bruins are all about when they head west. First, the foray that you've got out in Western Canada, and then the trip that they have through the Central Division. Because if you look, they have devoured the Eastern Conference. They've been good against the West, but not necessarily as good. And some of those games that they played against the Western Conference came BLA before that Los Angeles game. That's the line in the sand. So I think we'll get a better indication. Now, granted, that those games will take place after the trade deadline, that tour through the Central Division. But if you're Don Sweeney, you look at the window, look at the guys on your roster, look at the way that they're playing, look at their ages, look at their contract status.
Yeah,
I think all that factors in.
Yeah, the other part of that, too, is, you know, last year you run into a busy schedule in March. You have a couple of injuries come up right at the end of the season, March, April, and then right at the beginning of the playoffs. You lose three defensemen. So that's just, you know, play it out in your head. Something like that happens. Hopefully it doesn't. Hopefully something like that happens. Are you equipped with what you have right now here in Boston with seven defensemen and then down in Providence, and forwards or D, but last year was D mostly. Are you equipped to handle that? Or do you need to add that piece? And if you're just looking to add a rental piece, like that's something that, you know, they said, all right, if we're going to make a deal, it's going to be somebody with term. We're going to try to do that. And that's a whole different scenario. But if you're looking to make sure that you're equipped, if there's some key injuries here down the stretch and you have to put NHL guys in there, are the guys down in Providence able to do that right now? Big question.
Defensively, you know, it seems to be a bigger question than the forwards. It seems like when guys have gotten hurt or suspended or whatever up front, they've been able to mix and match very well forward position and really not miss a beat scoring-wise, defensive depth is a little bit of a different story, maybe.
Exactly. And that's, I mean, they, you know, they missed Krejci last year. That's going to be awfully hard to replace. So, sure. You know, that was in the playoffs. He got hurt one of the games in Ottawa there. But, you know, if you look at the back end, you were missing Carlo in last year's playoffs. You're missing Krug and McQuaid. Right. And that was a pretty big part of your D last year. And that, I mean, you're not going to be able to replace that like right away, but you're going to have some kind of depth there in case that happens. We have seven right now. Paul Postma's been the seventh guy. Actually, there's eight, right? Because Kevin Miller's hurt. Mm. But you've got eight here right now. Are you comfortable with that?
Is that enough? Right.
You know, I don't know the extent of Kevin Miller's injury. They're not, you know, they're being kind of tight lipped on it, but, you know, he's had a very good season. You want him in there. He's out. All of a sudden now, you know, another guy goes down. Are we equipped to do that? That's something that they're going to have to look at here. Are we equipped enough in Providence? Are we confident enough in Providence that whoever we call up can not do a job that maybe Torrey Krug could, but, you know, are they able to come up here and at least fill the hole?
And then you've got some nuance because the room and the resilience, the character, the relentlessness.
It's a good room this year.
Because there are so many great traits that we've seen through the Bruins here as we're almost getting to the point where they've played 55, 60 games. You want to make sure that if you are bringing in people that it adds to the room. It doesn't take away from the room. It doesn't change the mixture in the room. And it's been a terrific environment down there. So it doesn't have to be this big, prominent name that you're going to add to your roster because sometimes that can shake things up. And then the other thing is, I think that there are a lot of GMs that are wary about giving away assets for a guy like, go back to the trade that Minnesota made last year for Martin Hanzel. That was a disaster for Chuck Fletcher and the Minnesota Wild. And I think a lot of general managers are very wary of the rental market that's currently out there.
Yeah, I'm not saying you don't try to improve maybe offensively either when I'm talking about, but you know, it's kind of a tricky time right now, and it's something that they have to reevaluate. They have a luxury they don't know for sure, but it's looking like, you know, you're going to play Toronto in the first round, so you know your matchup. You kind of know what they have. They're probably going to try to do something at the deadline. You know, do you like that matchup as it sits right now, or do you have to kind of? Do you want to tweak one area or two areas and maybe just add something? So, yeah, I mean, tough time right now. It's a tough time for players hearing their names. I mean, I realize it's part of the business, but it's a tough time of year for some guys that, you know, if their names are being thrown around a lot and it's kind of uprooting their lives and whatever. Sure. But that's a fun time for everybody who speculates, but not fun for everybody.
All right, we'll get into more of that. We'll get into your phone calls, of course, at 617-779-0985. As we get started here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Stay with us.
Press the right pad, Sam. Let's go!
The Sports Hub Hockey Show. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub Hockey Show, 617-779-0985. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers with you up until 11 o'clock. Joe Haggerty will join us coming up in about 15 minutes as well. Let's get to some of your phone calls here this morning. Mark is in the car. You're up first here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
I liked how in November, December, all the analysts out there says, oh, Tampa Bay's going to run away with the Atlantic, the division. No one's going to catch up to them. Well, I bet you they're eating their words now. Bruins 3 points out of first place, competing for a President's Trophy. And second thing, guys, if the playoffs started right now and the Bruins had to play the Capitals, can they play a seven-game series with the team and actually beat them the way they're playing right now?
I appreciate the call. I mean, the Capitals obviously are further down the road. If you get to that point, I think you can pretty much play with anybody.
Finals.
But, I mean, we know the issues that the Bruins have had with the Capitals here over the years. That would not be the ideal matchup, perhaps, but... once you get to the conference final, you've shown that you can play with anybody in the league.
Yeah, I mean, obviously their issues with Washington are well documented, but who knows what you look like at that time? Who knows what they look like at that time between the trade deadline, between injuries, between, you know, just trying to get through the first two rounds? I mean, there's just so much that can happen. You know, hard to I would really like to see Washington and Boston in a regular season game now, given the way they're playing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but we're not going to see that because they're already done with them this season. But, you know, who knows what the teams look like. And, you know, I'd be pretty... I'll tell you the first part of his thing there with Tampa. Who saw the run that the Bruins were going
to
go on?
I mean, right, you don't expect a team to rip off.
I love it. It's great.
20 some on AO games without a regulation loss either.
It's been unbelievable, and you know, you still have three games left against Tampa. That's going to be interesting. You know, when we were talking about trade deadline. Okay, how do you match up against Toronto if that's going to be your first round? It's not a given. You could end up in first place and face somebody from the Metro Division who's going to come over. And who knows who that's going to be, because that division's just
changing
every day.
Philly, Islanders, Carolina, Columbus.
And that's what will happen. If nobody from the Atlantic, and it doesn't look like anybody is, but at least at this point, if nobody in the Atlantic gets into the wild card spot, then one of those teams is going to have to come over. So, I mean, it's right now, I mean, there's a lot of different ways it can go. It looks like Toronto, but there's still a lot of hockey to be played.
Two other thoughts, since we kind of jumped ahead on the Washington Capitals. Remember, if you get to that point, they have a lot of demons that they have to exercise from their game when it comes to the playoffs. So that's one thing to think about.
Yeah, they got
to
get through Pittsburgh first.
Right. Yes. If it gets to that point. And then the other thing, when you're thinking about the Tampa Bay Lightning, Steve Yzerman is in a great position to add with assets and cap space. They're going to be better on February 27th.
He's done a tremendous job with that organization. I mean, it really is. This is a guy who's obviously a Hall of Fame caliber player. Like, he has become a terrific executive. And is doing an unbelievable job there year in and year out. And it seems like every year he's kind of, he comes up against, contract issues, and he's managed to make the right move almost every single time.
And not only with that, but also some of the draft picks that have really panned out for them. I mean, Kucherov, obviously, but you look at Yanni Gourde. He has 20 goals this year. Braden Point. How good he has been. I think they might want to add a little defensive depth for them. You know, a couple years ago, it was Palat, it was Tyler Johnson, and can't remember the third guy on that line, that were, really unbelievable secondary scoring-wise for them. You got Stamkos, you were able to bring him back. He wanted to be there. You locked up Hedman long-term. Stamkos was a creative contract, if you look at it. He only gets paid $1 million a year. I say only. He gets paid $1 million a year, and the rest is in signing bonuses. That protects him in case there's a lockout.
Right.
Those are guaranteed. So very creative way to keep him and make sure he came back. He probably could have got more money somewhere else, liked it there. Once you make those moves to bring in certain people and to do things, you also have to – you want to keep certain players. And the ability to do that, the fact that he wanted to be there, Stamkos did – says a lot about Steve Yzerman and the way he handles his organization.
Steve Yzerman learned from one of the best, despite what's going on in Detroit this year. Ken Holland, for decades, was arguably the best general manager in the National Hockey League for what he was able to do. The other thing is, you don't get things done without terrific ownership. Jeff Vinnick, the guy who heads the group in Tampa Bay, has been fabulous. Success starts at the top. So I think those two factors certainly helped them. The other night in Detroit, Tampa Bay, if I'm not mistaken, had two scouts that were taking a look at the Detroit Red Wings. There's a lot of familiarity there. Three with Yzerman and Ken Holland. You've got some bad contracts that are there. There's no question, certainly, for where the Red Wings are at. And if you look at Tampa Bay's roster the way it is, they need D. Danny DeKeyser, I think, is going to be a guy who moves. It's not a great contract. He signed long-term for a big number for a guy who produces what he does and plays the style that he does. But I definitely see that Tampa Bay has to upgrade on the back end.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that they had three scouts there, because in Elliot Friedman's column this week, he mentioned something about that. He said an old-time scout once told him, when you're approaching the trade deadline, watch and see which teams send multiple people to scout another team. Like, that's when there's some serious interest in some of the players on that roster.
Well, and a lot of times they won't necessarily be on the list. Like, you'll see the press box seating chart, and you see, oh, they've got two guys here, they got one guy here, these guys have two guys. Then there'll be other guys that just sneak in the building, don't even tell anybody.
John, you're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Good morning.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling about the trade deadline. of the Bruins possibly not worrying about the defense and worrying more about the forwards. This team seems similar to the 1989-90 team. I think Bob Beers would be familiar with that team. And they just seem to have a good mix of youth and veterans and do something like they did at that trade deadline when they went out and acquired a guy like Brian Propp, who had like leadership and there was a goal scorer. He was kind of like Mark Recchi on a decline, but he was pretty good still. And then later they got Dave Poulin, who was very good at the time. And they also had kind of a young coach, and I believe it was Mike Milbury at the time. And to do something similar to that and not worry about the defense, because they can kind of do it like with the guys from Providence, sort of like how Bears came up, played a few games, and then did well in the playoffs. If he remembers well, I think he scored a big goal against the Whalers that day in overtime. To bring it close to the comeback they did, and they won.
Yeah, good memory.
Appreciate the call, John. Man, there you go.
And yeah, the only one that Poulin actually came earlier. He came the beginning of the season, I think, for Kenny Lindsman, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm.
But Propp was brought in late. Propp was brought in late that year.
Speaking my language, Brian Propp, Dave Poulin, my youth back in Philadelphia, loved both of those guys. But again, he says experience. I think you've got the experience here. I mean, you've got guys who have been through the wars, and as you mentioned earlier, the kind of the state of the locker room, where maybe it felt like over the last few years there was a little bit of a lack of leadership or something. It hasn't felt like that at all this year. And I know, look, winning solves a lot of that stuff, but with as much young talent as you have on this roster, I think that was kind of the question I had coming in, is are the older guys going to be able to help these young guys along? They have
embraced that aspect of it, and I think that it goes hand in hand with the type of people that you've brought in as younger players. I think their character is terrific. I think we've seen it time and again here. You know, if they're not going on a certain night, they accept the criticism, the constructive criticism, and they turn things around. They work at it. I think that they've taken the leadership, the older guys have taken that leadership to another level this year, knowing that they had to do that. And I think that was a challenge that put forth to them at the beginning of the season, even in the off season, saying, look, here's the direction we're going. You know, we got to pull these guys along. You know, they're good guys. They're good people. They'll work at it, but there's going to be nights where we have to pull them along, and times, you know, in between games where you've got to talk with them. And I think they've taken that challenge to another level. It's worked out extremely well. You always have a question. I think we all know what you're going to get from certain people in the playoffs. There's still a question of what you're going to get from some of the other guys in the playoffs. We don't know. It's, you know, yes, they played last, a couple of them played last year in Providence. I think you're pretty confident in a McAvoy based on what you saw last year in the playoffs. You know, Heinen and DeBrusk both excelled in Providence last year in the playoffs. Heinen led the team in scoring. DeBrusk wasn't that far behind. So that's a good taste. This is another level. You know, guys like that, Corrali, we got a good look at. So, you know, they have some idea, but there's still some question marks here going in to the postseason. It's nice to be able to talk about this in February.
Right.
You know, every game, every night, you're just hanging on every point. And you're watching the scoreboard, and it was so tight for the last three seasons, right? And they finally squeaked their way in last year. And
right.
You know, this year... I don't want them to take the foot off the gas, but it's just another. There's a whole other feeling altogether right now.
Right. I mean, for this team, the playoffs started a couple of months early in the last couple of years. Right. I mean, you were basically kind of playing must win games
when
down
you talk
the stretch
about the busy
every
schedule
night.
In March, and how every game just meant so much mentally, physically. That's draining when you've got to do that in order to get into the postseason. It'd be interesting to see how they handle it this year.
Yeah. Joe Haggerty of NBC Sports Boston will join us coming up next. Sarge has the Sports Hub headlines. It is the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
This is where Boston talks hockey. The Sports Hub Hockey Show on the home of the Bees, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Sports Hub Hockey Show continues. Coming up in about 10-15 minutes, we're going to have a chance for you to win a couple of tickets to go see the Bruins on Tuesday night over at the Garden against the Calgary Flames. We got Joe Haggerty joining us in studio now from NBC Sports Boston.
What's happening, fellas?
Morning.
Good morning.
We've been talking a little bit about the trade deadline a couple of weeks out. Some decisions are going to need to be made here. And ultimately, and we'll get into, as we get closer to it, I'm sure, like what you would expect Don Sweeney to do.
Yeah.
But, if you are Don Sweeney right now, like, what's your mindset on how to approach this deadline?
I'm kind of torn, to be honest with you, if I'm Don Sweeney, between, you know, doing, adding pieces that you feel like could put you over the top in the playoffs and get you all the way to the cup, because you look at the team and, you know, where they are right now, that's kind of what it dictates, their place and how they're playing is, you know, you're expecting a long playoff run and you want to have everything that you can for your arsenal on your roster going into the playoffs, depth-wise and addressing, you know, potential weaknesses on the roster. But at the same time, you know, you look at how good they've been, you look at the way that they're playing, you look at the depth that they're throwing at other teams and overwhelming teams with their forward depth and being able to roll their lines. You look at the defensemen and how deep they go there, which is certainly an advantage over last season. The goaltenders playing so well, them basically excelling in pretty much every facet of the game. And you say, how much do you really want to mess with this team? You know, how much do you really want to alter that chemistry? How much do you want to insert pieces in, because things are going so well right now? And I know they're playing 16 games in March and the second half is going to be tougher. And I'm sure they're going to go through some hard times before they get to the playoffs. And clearly there's a few things you look at and say, oh, they could use this. They could use, I think, my own personal opinion, a little more size and a little more experience on the wing. Certainly, I think they could add another defenseman. But they're going so well. You kind of, if I'm the GM, I don't envy Don Sweeney's position, because, you know, you're not sure how much they really need, how well they're playing right now, and how much you want to mess with what they're doing and sort of being in the development mode of continuing to get better and maybe advance a few rounds in the playoffs.
Yeah, but I mean, I do envy him. I mean, because he's in a good spot right now. If he decides to just status quo,
yeah,
you know, I think that they're comfortable with that, still moving forward and still developing some of these guys who have been.
I can understand that if they do that,
right?
You know,
and I don't think, I think that they're pretty stern in what they don't want to give up a good prospect for a rental player. I mean, I think we all agree with that, and I think that that's something that they're gonna hold firm on. But if you can do something, if you add somebody with term that's going to help you in the future, now that's a different story. Some of those deals are done in the offseason, but yeah, he has some things to wrestle with. But right now, I mean, I think he's in a good spot. I mean, I think that everybody's pretty happy with this team right now. And if they left a status quo, I think you could understand it. I do think that they're going to try to make a couple of moves depth wise, but at least one.
Well, yeah, you can certainly make a case. I mean,
yeah,
as you know, looking over this team over the past 2 months, you can certainly make a case that there's not a lot that should be done to it.
No, they're very small.
What's going to happen in mid-March? And
sure,
you know,
yeah.
But that's after the deadline.
Right. Yeah,
yeah.
I mean,
so there's no way to tell.
They're very small and very young on the wing, generally. So I think that's the one area you look at, especially in the playoffs when things get more physical and intense and you're not sure. I think it was Beersey that mentioned, so you're not sure how all of the rookies are going to respond, you know, in the postseason. It would be ideal to have a veteran guy, a guy that can finish, a guy with some size and strength to be able to plug in there if the rookies aren't quite, you know, what they are during the regular season.
But the more I started going through it, we do have kind of an idea. You know, I think there's DeBrusk and Heinen are the ones you don't really know, but I don't see anything that would kind of,
no,
that I can think of that would say
both those
guys are going to wilt in the playoffs.
They both battle. They both, you know,
and
win
the way
their
that
share.
They stepped up in Providence last year in the postseason was strong. I mean, Heinen led the team.
Yep.
So we've seen McAvoy. I mean, Grizzlick's, I guess, another question, but he played in the playoffs last year too down in Providence. That's where the experience comes in down there.
Yep.
We've seen McAvoy. We've seen Corrali. You know, so we've seen some of the younger guys play in those situations.
Yeah.
Haven't seen Carlo play in that.
No, that's right.
Because
he was hurt last year. That's true. I think he would be okay. The one thing just being, you know, they're both wingers. The Providence, it's a little different, obviously, than the Stanley Cup playoffs. And you would just hope that they're going to be able to bring what they did last year with the P. Bruins, you know, into Boston this year, but it's not a certainty that they would be able to. But you would think they would, especially the way that they play during the regular
high
season.
High character, yeah. I mean, that's stuff that they've tried to go with anyhow. You know, they've when they brought people in, those are the types of people that they want.
Yep.
So you don't expect that to happen at all.
I mean, in a wider sense, obviously, Don Sweeney's in a great position. The Bruins are in a fantastic position just all the way through when you look at the situation that they have. It's just, it's a tough decision when you're sitting, I'm sure, when you're looking at a team, like maybe a move or two could be the ones that put you over the top and get you all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals. Do you do those, or do you just stay with what you have because you like them so much and you don't want to part with all these prospects that you know other teams are going to be thirsting for when you're talking about trades with players? I mean, they're going to be asking for their best young guys right now, and you don't want to give any of them up.
Are there names that have been tossed out in the NHL realm here that you feel like might be good fits?
I mean, it's still early for that as far as specifics with the Bruins, but the names that are out there are all potential fits, whether it's, you know, Mike Hoffman, whether it's Vanek, whether it's Hagelin. You hear a lot of names like that of wingers that could be decent fits, especially the Rangers. I mean, it looks like the Rangers are going to dismantle and trade off a lot of those players. You know, people have mentioned Ryan McDonagh as far as defenseman goes, but that's like a huge get, and that would be a huge cost that you would have to give up to get a player like that. So that's a major deal, and I don't know if you're willing to do that with what you have on the roster right now.
And my understanding is when it comes to McDonagh, the likelihood is that if they're going to move him, it'll happen during the offseason.
That generally is the case. When you get guys with term, I mean, that's more of an off-season type move. That's something you might see at the draft as opposed to at the deadline.
But there is a lot of wingers that kind of fit the profile of what they're looking for, could potentially help them, and some of them it may not be much of a cost at all. So, you know, they're going to be able to have their choice, I think, of guys that they like and could potentially go after at the deadline.
Joe Haggerty, NBC Sports Boston, joining us. We will have more with him coming up here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
This is the Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Zerah, and Bob Beers on the home of the Bees, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Sports Hub Hockey Show. We are joined in studio by Joe Haggerty of NBC Sports Boston. Before we get back with him, though, I need to give you a chance to go and see one of the best teams in hockey. The caller number 10 to the Pride Motor Group contest line right now at 617-931-0985. We'll score a pair of tickets to see the Bruins battle the Calgary Flames on Tuesday night at the Garden. Select tickets are on sale for tonight's game against the Sabres right now at Ticketmaster.com as well. So 617-931-0985. Caller number 10 will get two tickets to see the Flames and the Bruins on Tuesday night.
The return of Dougie Hamilton again.
They doing a video tribute or anything like that?
I think they got that all over the way.
A lot of that talk at the Garden these days. This week marked the one-year anniversary of Bruce Cassidy as the head guy for the Bruins. It was on Wednesday. Since he took over, the record is 51-19-9. That's 79 games, so almost a full season with 111 points.
It's pretty good.
Not bad.
It's pretty good.
Not bad. What ultimately has made him so not just successful, but this successful?
Oh, I think it's a bunch of different things, but you know, one of it is a different approach, a newer approach that I think meshes better with today's NHL, perhaps than what was going on prior to him getting the job. I think it's his ability to develop and really speak to the young players and get the best out of them and put them in a place where they can go out, they can make mistakes, they can play, they can do their thing. They're going to be held accountable at times, but they're not afraid to make mistakes. And I think that was part of the issue with Claude Julien when he was here, is the young guys got to a point where they felt like the leash was so tight that they couldn't go out, take risks to make plays, do certain things because they were going to get called to the carpet. And I think once you get to that point with young guys, it's a losing battle. And you know, you've got that on one end, but then on the other end, you have him able to challenge the veterans as well, get their respect, also hold them all accountable, make everybody feel like they're equals in that dressing room and they're getting treated the same way. You know, if Tuukka Rask isn't playing up to par, he sits down for four games in a row, and that's something you didn't see before. You know, if a guy is injured and he's going to come back in, but the team is playing well and everybody's playing well, he's not. It's not a God-given right that he's going to be back in the lineup, and he has to, you know, wait until a spot opens up. I think
depends on who it is.
It does, but you know, before I think it was more of like a veteran got back in there, you know, and it was kind of like an automatic, and you know, I just think there's. Not only is it stylistically on the ice, offensively, they've been able to keep everything that they did well defensively, but I think the dressing room is in much better shape now than it was in the past, and I think there's much more of a feeling of unity and togetherness than there was before, and a lot of that comes back to the environment that the coach has fostered, and I give Bruce Cassidy a lot of credit in all fronts for all those things.
Well, I mean, if you look at some of the veterans on this team, David Krejci, is having a tremendous year.
Mm-hmm.
He he's playing, you know, still playing with kids most of the night, you know, most of the time, but he looks like a better player. Patrice Bergeron might be having his best year, which is saying something because, I mean, that guy is...
Well, I just wrote yesterday, he should be in the Hart Trophy conversation this year more than others in the years past, and he's putting up the numbers to do it, he's the great player to do it, and yeah, you're right. He's having a fantastic season, on a pace for like 40 goals and 75 points.
I mean, that in and of itself is... obviously, it's some of that speaks to the style that they're playing offensively and giving those guys the opportunity to be... as good offensively as they can be, and you've kind of taken the reins off of them there.
And it's pretty enjoyable. I mean, for the veterans, they're going to have fun playing that style, and they're all going to feel like it's playing to their strength, and they can go out and you know, put up points and still win games. And, you know, that's part of it, too, is I think they're having more fun now than they were before, too, and that's a key element and key part of it.
And you can see that.
Yeah.
You know, and again, that's not just... necessarily the winning, because winning's certainly a lot more fun than, you know, than grinding it out every single night and just trying to squeak into the playoffs. But you can see how much fun that this team is having and that they enjoy the style that they're playing.
They do, and you know, who wouldn't enjoy scoring lots of goals, putting up points? They're still able to play the defense that they need to. You know, they're playing winning hockey on all levels. And I think the thing about Cassidy, especially offensively, that a guy's appreciate is he allows them to be creative, you know, and he encourages it. And even the guys, even, you know, the Riley Nashes of the world that aren't ever going to put up big points, I think he encourages those guys to take some chances offensively and to try to make plays at certain points. And even the guys that aren't the traditional offensive players, he coaches that in them as well or encourages that. And I think there's an appreciation up and down the lineup for being allowed to do that. And you know, you would talk to some guys in the last few years here, especially when they weren't making the playoffs, it felt like a dirge, a funeral dirge going on during the season. Like, it just wasn't as much fun as it used to be. And I think Cassidy has brought back the fun to a lot of these players. And I think it's obvious when you watch them play.
All right, last question for you here. Tuukka Rask, 21 straight starts that they've collected points.
Yeah.
Two goals or less in seven straight. You regretting that column you did earlier this year yet?
No. Look, he's playing great right now, and they're playing great in front of him. I think that's it. There's been games where he's been outstanding, no question about it. There's been games where Anton Khudobin has been outstanding, especially in a couple of those games in the second night of back-to-backs when the Bruins didn't have it early. Khudobin was standing on his head, and they ended up winning those games because of that. You know, New York Rangers being another prime example of that. So the goaltending has been excellent, very strong. The team in front of them has been fantastic, and I think that's a lot of the credit, too, for what the goaltenders are doing. I think there's a reason they both have the same exact save percentage, starter and backup, and it's because of the guys also that are playing in front of them. But, you know, my questions remain the same with Tuukka Rask as they were at the beginning of the year. What's he going to do in the playoffs? Is he good enough to take them all the way to the Stanley Cup and win it? Is he the goaltender that can carry them and get that done? And I think that still remains to be seen.
You're going
to
get a better indication of that this year if everything stays the way it is, because he's on pace to play the number of games that they've wanted for him.
Totally.
And the games in March where every shot, every save, every minute of every game is mentally draining, and he had to play the majority of them because you got to get into the playoffs and, you know, wears down. When the games get at their most important,
yep.
they're going to be in a situation, if things stay the way that they are right now, I mean, it's been ideal for them so far, and I'm hoping that that continues because they've given them the luxury of resting the proper amount. And I think, you know, so that part of it was critical for them coming into the season, having a backup goaltender that played well from day one, and they've got it, and they've had it. And it's that success, what Dobin's been able to do this year, not only play well, but you know, have the confidence in management and the coaching staff to put him in there in those situations, that Rask can get the proper rest. And we've all seen when he hasn't had that proper rest that he has worn down, and they've made no, you know, they haven't tried to keep that a secret at all. They said, here's the number of games we want him to play.
Yeah, 50, somewhere 55 in this range. To 60, somewhere in there. Yeah,
they're right there right now.
Yep.
He's played 35 games. If you look, he played his 35th game last year on January 14th.
So about almost a month.
I just read that Frederik Andersen from the Toronto Maple Leafs is leading the league in minutes played this season. That surprised me a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, I know he's a little bit younger, but he's a guy that wore down a few years ago in Anaheim.
And, yeah, if that happens towards the end, it's going to be curtains for the Maple Leafs. And that's something we've seen play out with the Bruins. Your point is absolutely well taken, that Tuukka's in a great position to succeed right now and exactly where the Bruins wanted him to be headed down the stretch and into the playoffs. And now it's up to him to show what he can do when he's managed the way he feel like he should be and get him into the playoffs. And we'll see. But that's my point is, like, he's getting put into the position now to carry them, to be the number one, to be the elite guy, to do all of those things. But he's going to have to go out and show it to me in the postseason for a long stretch or a long run before I'm completely buying in on him. Because, you know, right now, the 21-game streak is just as much, I think, about the guys in front of him as about Tuukka Rask right now.
Hags is going full Missouri on us. Got to show me.
That's it.
Got to show me.
That's it. Show me, Tuukka.
All right. Appreciate you stopping in. Good
you
to
got
see
it, guys.
You. Joe Haggerty, NBC Sports Boston. Sarge will give us Sports Hub headlines. Hour two of the Sports Hub Hockey Show coming up with your calls, 617-779-0985.
The Bruins, the NHL. This is the show that's all hockey. The Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Sirai, and Bob Beers on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Ryan Johnston along with Judd Sirai and Bob Beers here in the Town Fair Tire Studios. Our thanks to Joe Haggerty for joining us. Billy Jaffe will hop in with us here in about another half hour. We'll go around the NHL with him, including... obviously, you guys have seen the letter that the Rangers sent out to their fans this week. Basically, prepare yourselves because we're getting ready to make some deals that perhaps you are not going to like. We're getting ready to cut ties with some guys that you would probably rather we keep around here. And interesting tactic. You don't see a lot of fans that are, or a lot of teams that are willing to be that open with their fans and say, okay, you know, you're not going to like this, but this is what we feel we have to do to improve the organization going forward.
Yeah, they've made no, it's been no secret, right? What they're going to do and or what they're going to try to do. I was surprised. You know, I don't know how you take that as fans. I guess, you know, if you're a loyal fan, you accept it and you realize that, you know, at some point things have to turn. I mean, look, what do you think Chicago fans are thinking right now?
Sure.
9 straight seasons in the playoffs, 3 Stanley Cups. It doesn't look like they're going to make it this year. They've had to sign guys to big contracts. I think that the Rangers have had, you know, their share of guys who have had those contracts and maybe from the previous regime that they got those deals, and now they've got to try to sort things out. I think the one thing that they can try to look at and say, things can turn around quickly for us, you know, and look at Colorado, you know, last in the league last
right.
year, and they're making huge strides this year. They're in a, you know, they're in a playoff push. You know, you can turn things around rather quickly. But when you're right in the middle of the pack, that's a little harder to do, right? I mean, you know, it's, you get the higher picks, that's one thing, but now they're kind of in the middle of the pack. Do you get the good picks? They haven't had great drafts, I don't think, here over the last several years. They haven't, they haven't had a number one pick in several years. They've been trading the number one pick away year after year after year. We were talking about that the other night, Judd, to bring in players at the
right.
deadline or to make trades, you know, and they haven't had a number one pick in a while.
No, and the drafting development just certainly hasn't been there. I think the two fascinating things are, one, the transparency and the honesty. That I don't know who ultimately generated that letter, whether it was Jeff Gorton, whether it was somebody a little bit further up the chain. You know, and the other thing is that maybe this forebodes exactly how drastic some of the changes that they're going to make to tear it down, to build it back up. You know, certainly the formula is there, and it's not just here in the National Hockey League. You can see it in some other sports that if you decide, you know, as long as your management is good, as long as your draft and development is, mm-hmm. is solid, and that's certainly a question when it comes to the Blue Shirts, that you know, if you sink yourself into the lottery for a number of years, you have an opportunity to get some world-class, well, high-impact elite players.
Some of it started last year with them because they traded Stepan out to Arizona, and they ended up getting their first-round pick, I believe, right? And yeah. Which was a higher okay. top.
They got a first and a first-round prospect in yeah. Tony DeAngelo.
Yeah, that was the guy that Schaller walked around.
That's
the other
exactly
day.
Right. That's why we put the quotes on that one. But you know, this has been going on here for a little while, and I think it's time, you know, to basically tear it down. The other thing is that they understand, even though they're, you know, if you look at the standings, well, the Rangers don't look like they're that far out of it.
But 3 points as of this morning.
But they're honest with themselves. This is not a team that's going to go anywhere, and it's not going to go anywhere in the short term. We have to make drastic changes so you can have sustained success. And they have to go through that right now.
Yeah, I mean, we see that on a regular basis, that teams that are kind of right on that bubble of just making a playoff spot, they don't want to be sellers because they're throwing up the white flag. They're sending the wrong message to the fans. The fans aren't going to be happy. Again, that's why the Rangers come out and tell their fans point blank, like, yeah, you're probably not going to be happy with some of the moves that we make, but there's a plan in place that this is, you know, we are. You know, we're looking at this over the long term as opposed to just trying to get in as the eighth seed in the playoffs this year. 617-779-0985. We'll talk more about that situation with Billy Jaffe when he's with us later on in the hour. Maria in Watertown, you're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Good morning, gentlemen. Morning. Just three quick points. Number one, I agree with Joe regarding Tuukka Rask, and I think if Tuukka is going to quiet his detractors once and for all, he's got to come up big in the playoffs, because as we all know, you will only go as deep in the playoffs as your hot goalie will carry you, and he can ill afford to have any mental or physical breakdowns in order to get past that. Number two, with regard to the team currently and the pace of play that they've been sustaining thus far, is there any concern with regard to the younger players of any type of mental or physical fatigue setting in? It's a much different pace of play and level of play at the NHL level, and I'm just wondering if you guys have any thoughts on that. And number three, quickly, with regard to Alex Burrows, once a turd of a hockey player, always a turd of a hockey player, and I wish he had gotten 10 games rather than the 5 that he received. No use for what he did to Taylor Hall. And anybody who can bite Patrice Bergeron's finger is capable of doing anything. Thanks for the time, guys.
All right, appreciate the call. He did get 10, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, just making sure of that.
Yeah, and he will not appeal. He got 10 games, and he said he's not going to appeal it.
Interesting, okay. So, I mean, if you saw that incident the other night, kneeing a guy in the head while he's down, I mean, that's, you know, look, it's an emotional game, obviously, we know that, but at the same time, there are certain lines you don't cross, and when a guy's right. down and defenseless, you can't take advantage of him that way.
Yeah, and, you know, to add on, no, he can't. I mean, he's had his issues, and, you know, well, we were just talking about Brad Marchand, you know, not that long ago.
Sure.
You know, how he has to kind of turn things around. He's still young enough to be able to do it. I don't know what Burrows' age is, but he's kind of dropped off a little bit here from his days with Vancouver. With Tuukka Rask, he's definitely had some times where he's worn down. We've talked about that. They've been open about that. He's had some, you know, things arise at key times. You know, that game against Ottawa where he got sick a couple seasons ago. They needed to win that game or get a point, I believe, and they mm-hmm. you know, they lost. But he did take them to the Stanley Cup Finals in 2013. So it hasn't been all, you know, that side of it. He's had some pretty good runs,
too. It always amazes me how people people obviously all remember how that game six ended, but they don't remember every game leading up to that. I mean, you know, he had a hell of a run to get you there, you know, especially in that series against Pittsburgh. He was phenomenal to get you to that point.
He was, I mean, the game that he had against Malkin, I know that they swept the Penguins, but Malkin had like 9 shots. He was all over the ice. He was phenomenal. Might have been game 3. And Rask stoned him time and time again in that game. I mean, you know, that's so, you know, you can criticize, and there's room to criticize for certain things, but it hasn't all been bad. He's had some pretty good runs, too.
And we're jumping ahead, obviously, but I think for any goalie, when it comes to the playoffs, just make the saves you're supposed to make. No head scratchers. If your team's in front, keep them there. If you're down by a goal, give your team an opportunity to rally and come back.
So I was make just the saves looking. You're supposed to make and make That's a couple it. Other ones.
Right.
Maybe, anywhere from 3 to 5. But if you look, when it comes to the playoffs, it's sort of shifted. You know, your goalie, obviously, he has to play that way in order for you to win across basically a 2-month tournament when it comes to the playoffs. But since 2007, there are only 2 goalies that have won the Conn Smythe. One was Tim Thomas. The other, Jonathan Quick. But you have to go all the way back to Cam Ward. You know, then you started to see a few more other goalies mix in. But for the most part, it shifted a little bit. How much you have to rely on your goaltender when it comes to the playoffs in order to win you a cup.
To speak to her other question, Bob, about the young guys and the fatigue. You know, you've got a guy like a McAvoy coming out of college or something like that is different perhaps than the guys like a Heinen or DeBrusk who have played a full pro season Corrali, under their belt, right?
Grizzlick. They've all played down there.
Right.
They've all played down in Providence, and they've all played full seasons and into the playoffs. So, you know, they have done that. Now, the NHL is a different level, so there is some question there. McAvoy played, you know, I know that it's, you know, look at his college season last year, but he played for 5 different teams last season.
It's like 60 games total or something in that neighborhood, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So, I don't see it happening with him, you know. Maybe it does. Maybe he goes through a little dip and play, but right now, you know, then it was always, okay, guys are going to hit the wall at some point, so you got to manage them through that so that they can come out the other side.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Instead of hitting the wall and then that's it, they were done for the season. So, you know, I think that they're pretty well aware of it and how you try to manage. They've tried to manage rest. I mean, they take several days off. There's a lot of optional skates now. The practices just don't seem to be, I mean, as a coach, you want to practice your team, but they've been really good at giving the proper rest and you know, there's so much made of nutrition and how you handle yourself and everything else. I don't see it with this group right now. And maybe they'll prove me wrong in March. I hope that's not the case when things really get condensed and they're playing every day, but or more than every other day they play in March and April.
Right.
So, you know, that's going to be busy. There's going to be a number of road games along that time. So, you know, that'll be a real important stretch for them and how they come out of that, you know, not just for the young guys, but for everybody.
Well, we talk about
for the younger ones.
I'm sorry, Bob, but we talk about the way that the Bruins have managed the goaltending situation, and you've got arrested Tuukka Rask. Look at the way that the forwards and the defense have been deployed for the most part. We talked about Patrice Bergeron certainly being one of the top 3 contestants for the Hart Trophy in the National Hockey League. Because the forwards are deployed differently, you're not asking him to be the main shutdown guy all the time. Look at the way that Bruce Cassidy's been able to roll his lines. It doesn't matter whether it's home or road, the matchup. I mean, certainly things will change when the game is on the line to certain extents. But that also goes with the defense. You've been able to balance the minutes for the most part. Yeah, and the way that I'm sure a lot of people are going to be focused on a guy like Zdeno Chara. He's been steady at around 23.5 minutes almost all season long, and he's been aided by the fact that the guy who also should be one of the finalists for Rookie of the Year, and Charlie McAvoy, has helped his game because he can trigger the transition game. You don't need Chara to be able to do it.
It's the kind of minutes, too.
Yes.
It's the type of minutes. I mean, he's going to play hard minutes with the penalty kill. He's going to play hard minutes with some of the shutdown or matchups that they have, but their puck possession is when they're on their game, they've got the puck in the offensive zone. That's not taxing minutes. I mean, those are fun minutes. You know, that's when you enjoy it, but you're not stuck inside your own zone. You know, there's going to be times where I forget who they played against where he had that long shift and it was a penalty kill, and He was out there for, I don't know, 4 minutes or
Montreal.
Something like that. Yeah. So, you know, there's going to be times like that. But I just looked at just the ice times. Average ice time per game. You got to go all the way down to number 33 in the league. Ironically enough, Zdeno Chara, 33rd in the league in ice time. Average ice time per game. You know, and you know, most of everybody in front of them is going to be younger. We realize that. But that's... They've been able to manage the minutes, to your point, and they've used everybody. You know, there's very few games where you look down and there's not a forward who's not in double digits in ice time. You know,
I was looking at, you know, some of the fourth liners are 12, 13 minutes a night on average for the season, and that's right.
You know, so that's they're going to get some of their ice time there, but they play all four lines, right? And that's, I mean, I think that's so important to have that depth.
And just to. You know, put that up against your top line, Bergeron, Marchand are 19 and a half, 20 minutes. Like, so, I mean, your fourth line is, you know, kind of just in comparison, that you can see the significance of the time that they're getting on the ice every night. 617-779-0985. We can get to more of your calls coming up here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
You're listening to the Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sports Hub Hockey Show, Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers. Billy Jaffe will join us in about 15 minutes from now as well. 617-779-0985 if you would like to jump aboard with us. Get your guys' thoughts on a few things before we get back to the callers. Brad Marchand gets suspended. Obviously, we talked about that at length a couple of weeks ago. The Bruins go 4-1 without him. You know, their first loss in forever, obviously, the first regulation loss in there. But in the meantime, you see, you know, again, we talked about the depth of this team. A guy like Danton Heinen fills in. And Heinen, 2 assists against Toronto, a goal and an assist against Detroit. You know, this is a guy who has really kind of come into his own, and more than anything, it feels like you can put him anywhere among the four lines, and he has found a way to have success because of the way that he approaches the game. And, you know, even when it comes to trying to replace, I mean, nobody on this roster generally is going to replace Brad Marchand's productivity, but you plug him into a line with Patrice Bergeron, and then they really don't miss a beat.
Coaches love versatility.
Yeah.
They love guys that they can move up and down their lineup, that they can move to either side, and he's been valuable wherever you have put him. I tell you what, the other guy who I think, when you talk about coming to your own, to borrow that phrase, Jake DeBrusk right now is playing, I think, some of his best hockey all season long. We had David Backes on during the first intermission of that game in New York, and he said, I think that he now has the confidence and the belief that he can be an impact player at the National Hockey League level. He is making some terrific high-end plays right now.
The goal that Chara scored the other day was, I mean, good goal. Zdeno Chara, good shot, everything else. Before he got the puck, that was all Jake DeBrusk, mostly, anyhow. He created 2 turnovers below the goal line, and he made the pass out. I mean, it was an outstanding shift. And, you know, I know with Heinen, he continues to make plays. He continues to win his battles. He continues to be on the right side of the puck and make smart decisions. You know, very few times he's not making the right decisions. He's out on the ice against Detroit in the last minute or so of a game, you know, protecting a 1-goal lead or 2-goal lead, whatever it was at the time. I know Detroit scored one late, but he's out there late in the game. I mean, you know, there's a lot of trust right now with those guys. Bruce Cassidy talked that last year they tried to have those guys kill penalties down in the American Hockey League to get a taste, so it's not all one way. You know, they get a taste of what it's like, and if they got to use them up here, they can. They haven't used them regularly in those situations, but they've both been regulars on the power play. But you know, to get a feel for that type of game, so it's not just one way. You know what I mean? So, you know, that's part of the development. There's a lot of little things that go on behind the scenes that, you know, that part of the development, and you see it when they come up here. And I think to their credit, okay, you know, once I get up here this year, I'm not going back down. You know what I mean? I mean, DeBrusk was down there all season last year, did not get one call up, and I think that was part of it. Heinen was a little different. You know, he made the team out of camp. He had to go back down. Even this year, he's here right at the beginning of the season, didn't have a couple of great games. They sent him down, 8 points in 4 games, played well, back up here. I'm not going back down. I'm here to stay. And he's played like that this season.
Well, Austin Czarnik, by the
way, I was just going to bring him up. Very small sample size.
But for Austin Czarnik, small sample size, 3 assists in the last 3 games, trying to seize the opportunity. And Matt Grizzlick, the way he's played, you're getting to the point where you're saying he's almost established himself as a regular in the National Hockey League. I don't know if we're there yet, but he has certainly been terrific over a much longer stretch of time playing some valuable minutes for the Bruins.
Yeah, I was just going to mention Czarnik because, you know, kind of similar, you know, get a chance here and there, and now, you know, you get brought up in, you know, when the team needs you, when you need a body, and he comes in 3 points in 3 games, and it's, you know, I think his name came up a week or two ago about how well he had been playing down in Providence. Like, he was
the representative of the All-Star game. He was one of the leaders in scoring.
Yeah.
You know, but can he translate it to the NHL level, and can he be consistent with it? And that's been, you know, the question with him.
And he may not play tonight.
Right.
If Nolichari's ready to go, he's going right back in his normal spot.
Good problem to have.
Well, right? you can afford to. He's only had the one practice, right? So, I mean, you can afford to give him some extra time to get back, much like they did with Kevin Miller. He was pretty much ready to be back, but they gave him some extra time. McQuaid was another one. Yeah. You know, you can afford to give them to make sure that when they get back, they're 100% and they're not trying to play through something if you've got the depth to bring guys in. And I think that's going to be really important here in this, you know, next month.
Let's go to Bill in New Hampshire. Bill, you're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hey, fellas. Good morning. How's everybody doing today?
Morning. Good.
Good, good. First-time caller and huge B fans. And just kind of bumping off the wonderful lady who called in before on the whole Rangers deal. So is there anybody on that roster, okay, seeing that they're having a fire sale, one worth, you know, looking at and plucking? And two, you know, as she had mentioned, you know, obviously need a hot goalie in the playoffs. And could Lundqvist even be an option for the Bees as a backup in case Tuukka, you know, somehow falls flat on his face? At least you've got, you know, a legitimate kind of starter. I know he's aging a little bit, you know, maybe as a backup. And is Lundqvist even better than Hudobin? And thanks for the time, guys. Right. And really, that's all I have to say.
I appreciate the call, Bill. I don't think we're going to go down the Lundqvist road.
Yeah, let's stay away from the Lundqvist stuff. Listen, I love Ryan McDonagh as a long-term option for you on the left side for everything that he brings to the table, both his tangibles and intangibles. As far as some other pieces that certainly could be attractive, Michael Grabner, Nick Holden, I think you also have to, you know, look down the middle. You can never have enough defensemen when it comes to the NHL playoffs. Centers are vitally important as well.
Yeah. The thing about McDonagh, obviously, is the contract. You get it's another year on the contract at a very reasonable $4.7 million. That is what is going to make him very attractive, but not just here. You know, if the Rangers are going to be willing to move him, there are going to be a lot of suitors for a guy like that, and that's going to drive the price up. So, you know, the fact that he's gotten that very manageable year left on his deal makes him a whole lot more attractive.
It's a completely different type of deal. I mean, you're not getting a rental. This is a guy that's going to be with you for a long time. You're going to have some parameters of what it's going to take to re-sign him once that contract is up. You're going to want him on that left side for a number of years. You know, once Zdeno Chara retires, whenever that is, who knows? I mean, you know, but you're going to need somebody over on that left side. And is that within the organization right now, or is that somebody that you have to go out and get? And if you're making that trade, that's, you know, when they're saying they're not giving up prospects, they're not giving up prospects for rental players. Guys are just going to be in here for a few games and be gone at the end of the season. You know, you're not going deep into that pool. But you're talking to somebody like Ryan McDonagh, that's a completely different
conversation. That's a guy you're willing to dip a little bit deeper for because he's going to be around for a while.
Yeah, and I think the other thing you have to think about when it comes to the Rangers, especially if you're trading a guy of that type of significance, for a lot of GMs, they will say, you know what, I'm willing to deal with him, but I'm not going to deal him within the conference. I don't want to see him 5 times a year.
Right.
I can maybe see him twice, but I don't want to see him all the time.
We will be joined by Billy Jaffe. We'll get a little bit further into that Rangers situation and some other things going on around the league coming up after the Sports Hub headlines. It's the Hockey Show. Stay with us.
Press the right hand, Sam. Let's go!
Sports Hub Hockey Show. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
98.5, The Sports Hub and The Sports Hub Hockey Show. Taking you until 11 o'clock. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers. Now joined in studio as well by Billy Jaffe. You can see him as part of the Bruins Nesson broadcast. Good morning.
Morning. How are you guys doing?
Good. How are
good.
You?
Great.
Sound great.
Wonderful.
Sound excited.
I am. Well, you know, Saturday, game day. Busy day.
7 o'clock start tonight against Buffalo over at the Garden, of course. We've been talking intermittently about the New York Rangers this morning. Rather interesting last few days in New York when Glenn Sather and Jeff Gorton come out with an open letter to the fans and tell
almost
them...
almost unprecedented.
Buckle your seatbelts. It's about to get a little bumpy here.
Yeah, exactly. That's the analogy I used on the other day talking about it, because it's like the plane captain coming on actually before you take off saying, you know, we're going to get you there. It's just going to be bumpy. It's going to be turbulent for a while and may have to fly around a few thunderstorms. You know what? It probably coincides with their season ticket renewal. So I think that there was a big business element behind this as well. That, you know, I don't know if they're asking for more money, meaning above that they already charged this year, but it doesn't surprise me. I think they decided to come out and say, yeah, we're not ready to do anything this year, so we're going to readjust. I actually give Jeff Gorton, who's made a lot of the business decisions, hockey business decisions there the last couple of years, credit for standing up, taking it. We don't see this often. This is a new era, new way of doing it in the social media world and everything, and I actually have no issue with it. Now, will it affect the Rangers? They came out and they played pretty well last night without Ryan McDonough in the lineup, beating one of the best road teams in the league in the Calgary Flames. I think when it's all said and done, it will affect them. Henrik Lundqvist will do his part to prove perhaps management wrong, that they don't completely throw out the everything out the window. But the Rangers are going to make some deals. Not all of them are going to happen right now. You know, everybody would love Ryan McDonough. I heard the last bit of it coming in when the caller came in. But I'd be shocked if he's traded in season. Could he be traded off season? Yeah, it's part of a big deal.
What about, I mean, obviously, Rick Nash is one of the big fish there.
Nash and Grabner are the two biggies right now.
How much does Rick Nash help a team?
He has 15 goals in the playoffs in 77 career playoff games. If you're wanting him to be your big goal scorer, chances are you're not going to get that. If you want him to add an element of great two-way player, speed, excellent penalty kill, not an issue in the locker room whatsoever, I think he can help you. But if you're looking for him to be a scorer, history doesn't show that that's what it'll prove to be.
He's a good player. I don't think there's any question about it. You know, Bob and I were talking about it the other night. So the Rangers are getting blown out by the Bruins, and there are all sorts of scouts that are there to watch. Bob brought up the point because I had mentioned at the time, boy, this is a hard game to scout. Like, if you're watching the Rangers and you're watching them getting absolutely eviscerated on the ice by the Boston Bruins, and I think, Bob, you had mentioned who's still playing hard, who's showing up to play. With all due respect to Rick Nash, and it's one game, I didn't see him at all after the first period. You know, he was a factor.
I don't know if he wants to leave New York.
And he may not.
He could resign there.
There's a feeling that he might actually do that. And if I'm Jeff Gorton, I don't know how that's going to help the process.
I know.
Well, where's this guy led you?
For a lot lower number.
Yeah, he's not going to get 7.8. I know. I just look at the playoff numbers and I say, good, but not great.
What's he done for the Rangers?
I'd rather have Grabner. Quite honestly, I want a guy like Grabner. I think he's at 1.56 or 1.65 this year. Who's hungry? Who's in line for a? He is. He wants to go to that smorgasbord buffet and feast up because he could get $4 million plus. He's had these kind of. Somebody's going to pay it. Whether he should or not is irrelevant.
His numbers They're hilarious.
They are hilarious. Yeah.
He's got 21 goals right this season. He's going for the Cy Young.
Yes, six assists.
No assists. Yeah, 21 goals. He has zero on the power play.
Yeah, how many empty netters?
Power play.
I know. How many empty netters does he have?
Six.
Too? There you go. Right.
Six empty net.
But that means that they trust him at the end.
Definitely. But you know, he uses his speed. He kills penalties. You're going to play him at the end.
See,
he's not going to be a guy that's going to put up a ton of numbers for you. in an offensive role, but he'll score some of those goals that type of way, and he has that element of speed.
Crazy good speed.
Yeah.
And how many, now, his first year, full year, 30 goals, 30-plus goals with the Isles. He's had a couple of other 20-goal seasons. I don't think
he didn't have a contract when he signed with the Rangers. Like, that's why he took such a pay cut.
Right.
I mean, he was
free. He was an invite camp. So I'd rather have a guy like that, quite honestly, not just contraction, but also the hunger to win, but also to set him. If he has, let's say he gets traded to a contender and he's got a great playoff, whether they win it or not, he's a great playoff. The guy's going to, he is going to cha-ching. He's gonna cash in. I want that on my team.
It never hurts.
No.
Never hurts to have a guy on a contract run.
No.
Right?
No.
Billy Jaffe joining us in studio. We will continue with him coming up as the Sports Hub Hockey Show takes you up until 11 o'clock.
This is where Boston talks hockey. The Sports Hub Hockey Show on the home of the Bees. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Billy Jaffe is with us in studio as we take you for about another 10 minutes or so. Going around the NHL, get you set up for tonight's game against Buffalo as well. But with Billy here, trade deadline 16 days away. We were talking about the New York Rangers, and they have put up the open for business sign this week.
Yep.
What other teams? Are there any other? Let's put it this way: we know some of the teams that are going to be in the market as sellers. Are there any that you think might be sellers that might surprise us at all?
I think Carolina and Columbus are going to... You know, Carolina, I don't know how much they have to sell, but they're not a good team. They were fashioned themselves to be in this great... And they're battling for a playoff spot. Let me, I guess, preface it with... I know they're not, you know, Ottawa or Arizona, but they're malaise of blah. They're not tough. they're not skilled enough. They're not deep enough. Are they going to sell? As in, like, but I don't think they're not going to get rid of their young players. But I still think they might move a piece or two. If there's, could Cam Ward interest somebody? Could he? You know, and get something back? He's played surprisingly well this year, and you can get an asset for him. The problem there then is, then you're stuck with Scott Darling, who hasn't. Columbus to me is a team. I talked to some of the people there in Columbus yesterday, some of the coaches, and they're sticking to what they know, and they're sticking with it, what they believe in, and this and that. Are you kidding me? I mean, they're a couple of points out of the playoffs, and they're supposed to be this great team. I wasn't buying them to begin with. I would look to move a Boone Jenner. I would look to move Dubinsky. I would look to move a few guys there because it's not going the right way. You need it. Detroit's going to be
Johnson's already asked for the trade there, right?
Who's
Jack,
that?
Jack Johnson.
Well,
he's asked for the trade.
He's asked for it because of his contractual situation and because of his financial situation they put himself in, and his parents did. Yes, and they think, Bob, you see that report? They think they can get a low first-round pick for him. I don't know if I believe that, but D-men are crazy.
Well, that's what they're going to say.
Right. Yeah, that's what they're gonna hold. Here's my question. See, I think Dallas is going to be a buyer in the West. I think they're going to. I think Hitch believes in this team, and their goal differential is a plus 30. They're not bad. They're just missing a little. What does a team like Minnesota do that's right after them that is battling? Well, what does Minnesota do?
Minnesota doesn't want to do what they did last year,
right? Which is bring in guys that collapsed. They did squat. So what do they do? Does Minnesota say? Does Chuck Fletcher, who's got to be in self preservation mode? Does he stand pat with this team, or do you again try and add for an 8 spot to get in? That's the team that I really wonder about.
Well, that's what we were talking about with the Rangers earlier. It's, you see year in and year out, there are teams that they want to just get in the playoffs.
Yeah, but the Rangers weren't that way.
No, I'm saying they're doing the exact opposite of that this year.
Well, no, I'm saying in the years past.
Yeah.
They had 4 years, fellas, 4 years where they played the most games of any team in the NHL between regular season and postseason.
What place did Nashville finish last year in the regular season?
Lower. Yeah.
Seventh or eighth.
Yeah. I know.
To go to the cup final. You know what I mean? There's tons of examples of teams that finish lower in the standings that just make it in, and all of a sudden things kind of come together for them and they start winning. And then I'd also add to the fact, don't underestimate ownership. And if you're right on the cusp of getting in, you want to get in. You want to make sure you're in. You get that gate for playoff gate. Don't underestimate the influence of ownership with some of these teams. And I don't, you know,
I don't disagree.
But, I mean, isn't the NHL the league of just get in? Because right. everybody has a chance.
And the team that, that...
Ottawa made it to the conference finals last year.
Right, and L.A. won it a couple of years ago, more than a couple of years ago now. But the team to me that I think is going to try and do something big is the New York Islanders. I think they're going to try to, even though I think it's a... I think it's a... They're awful defensively and in their own net. I know they got Boychuk back last night. That could help. Should help. But they're fun as heck to watch because, you know, they're going to give and get type of thing. I think they're going to try to make a big move to keep John Tavares enticed to stay there. That seems to me, I thought all along he would sign their falls. I'm not thinking that anymore. I'm not. I'm going less and less likely towards that. I see them making a move, and I see Dallas making a move. I get you, Bob, what you're saying about ownership and making it and get me a couple mil and get in and everything. I just look at, I mean, Dallas to me is a team that I could say, geez, you know, with a little addition, I could see them doing something, I guess. I don't see Minnesota being able. Do you see Philly or the Islanders just getting in and being able to make it more than a round, Bob? Like,
depends. I mean, Philly can catch fire. Philly's a, they're Jekyll and Hyde. I mean, they lost 10 games in a row. You see them win some games. They're a team that I don't think they have the goaltending or the some of the experience in some of the other spots that they need. But they've talked about the fact that they're not going to...
I agree.
You know, they're not giving up their prospects. They like the trajectory that they're on right now and some of the young guys that they have, and they're going to stick with that. Doesn't mean they won't make a move or two. They're still looking for a goaltender. Right. I think we all agree with that. But
it's 1980.
Who was the other team you asked me about?
Mini.
Good chance that Philly would have to come over to the East. Or not,
right.
I'm sorry, the Atlantic.
Right.
To play that first round.
I said Philly or the Islanders. Like, do you see, and then Mini in the West. I don't see Mini in the West. Yeah. I don't see Mini in the West being able to go past the second round. I don't.
Well, you have three teams from the Metro miss. And that, you know, try to pick those teams out. I mean, you got Columbus who's on the outside looking in, Carolina, Philly's in right now, right?
Philly and the Islanders are in right now. The Isles have played two more games, one more game than Carolina.
Rangers are out.
Yeah.
Columbus
Rangers
out.
Rangers are out. I think it's, I'm going to, as of right now.
You know,
yeah, as of right now. I think, personally, I do think the Islanders sneak in. I do. I don't see the Rangers, obviously. I don't think I see Columbus making it. They've relied so much on Bobrovsky. By the way, he's been average lately. He has been average, and there was a goal last night that was on him. I just don't see this Columbus team showing me enough overall attitude to make it.
Name that came up off air, Erik Karlsson.
Yeah. Yeah, Ottawa's a dysfunctional organization. I've said that all year long.
Just gave their GM 3 years extension.
Let me repeat what I just said. Ottawa's a dysfunctional organization.
Well, and they get to the conference finals last year, and you know how quickly things can turn around.
Right.
I mean, that's just... I sat here last year and saying, I do not believe that they're as good as they're playing right now. I can't believe that they're still in the hunt. I didn't expect them to make the playoffs last year. And this year they came back to reality. I mean, it's just been...
harsh reality. This is year two also of Guy Boucher. He did the same exact thing in Tampa. Year one, off the charts, good, 2010-11. Year two, not so good. Year three, halfway through the season, fired. I see similar lineage or history repeating itself right now. They gave Pierre Dorion a three-year extension. They fired.
If he's going to make trades, he's got to be the guy that's going to be here. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that's the thing about Marc Bergevin in Montreal, right? You know, do they if they're going to make a change there, you want to do it before the deadline or before they start making
some
of these trades.
Right, you don't want him remaking your roster if he's not going to be around, right?
I don't know if that's the case.
He and Jeff Molson are tight, and I'm told that Claude Julien and Marc Bergevin have a very tight relationship, too. They, you know, it's very copacetic, so maybe that's where they're going to stick with it. Maybe they add somebody. You know, we're seeing a lot of teams add somebody in this advisor role, or we see them add an executive assistant, not assistant, you know what I mean, assistant GM type thing. I could see, but Erik Karlsson to me would bring back a ton. You know, I could see a team like the New York Islanders making a real big push for him. I could see a huge push for a guy like that. I don't think they'll trade Mark Stone. The Hoffman thing. Now Mike Hoffman's been playing beautifully in the last few weeks, last 2 weeks with Matt Duchene. They're still so far away from being a good team in Ottawa. You know, you can fall in love and fall in lust. Love, you hope, lasts. Lust usually is a short-term thing. Don't fall in lust with some of your players that have all of a sudden, with no pressure on them, no pressure, have started to shine again, you know, and to score. You're in 15th place, right? 15th, 14th, 15th in the East, right? 15 or 16 teams, I always forget.
16 in the East.
So they're in 15th, yes.
What time are you guys on tonight?
We're on at 6 o'clock tonight. We have a full hour pre. Yes.
All right.
We do. Thank you.
We will be watching. Appreciate you coming in.
Good to see you guys.
Billy Jaffe, Nesson, Bob Beers, Judd Surratt, 6:30 pregame, 7 o'clock face-off tonight.